Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah! The radio show with
her. I don't know if everybody ready.
Yeah! Okay.
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up.
College. Happy Monday. My name is Elizabeth Press, and you are listening to a Blog Talk Radio show where, if you guessed it, we are going to be talking about Congress, but you know what? We're doing something a little different. We are broadcasting from Tallahassee, Florida, and my good friend and your radio show host that you love, Andrea Shea King, is with me. We are here for Franklin Graham's Decision America Tour, the kickoff of his all 50-state tour. We're going to talk about it in a minute. Do I hear Andrea? Is she around?
Hey, Elizabeth. Hi. Welcome.
Hi.
Welcome. Nice to be on the program.
Back
in the saddle again. Here we are traveling one more time.
Exactly. We're not far from our stomping ground, though. Tallahassee's not far from where either Andrea or I live, but we're looking forward to the tour tomorrow. We're going to talk a little bit about it, but let me get going with Congress College and those that are listening. And I'm sorry, I'm doing it remotely, so I'm having trouble with the chat room, as I always do. I think it's a browser issue. But anyway, you kind of know the deal. We talk about Congress twice weekly. Monday is the show we do right now, and this is the one at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard, where we typically outline the week, and that, of course, means we talk about what will be coming up in the Senate of the United States and then in the House of Representatives. And then on the Friday show is when we recap the week. And that means we talk about literally what happened in the House, what happened in the Senate. And I say this all the time. I do the show so you can answer this really, really simple question. Were you represented well in Washington, D.C. for the week? Because, hey, we're in the state capital of Florida. We're in Tallahassee. So these folks get it, too. You know, representative means that we have this representative government, but you've got to kind of know what's going on with the representative government. If it's going to work well, you need to know what your representative is up to, and that's the reason I do Congress College. Another reason is to familiarize folks with the free website, gradegov.com. And, of course, gradegov.com lets you grade a member of Congress. It can be your member of Congress, or maybe somebody, a new one you just heard about. And speaking of hearing, you've got Kirk Badger, Do Your Stuff. That's the show that's playing in the background. Let me mute it a little bit. And again, welcome, Andrea, to the show. And I'm going to start off. Andrea, jump in whenever you can. We're going to first talk about a presidential veto that we know happened. It happened last Friday. The president, yes, he vetoed the repeal of Obamacare, the reconciliation bill, and Ryan has basically said that he is going to make sure that the veto message goes all the way through. What does that mean? That means that he's going to call it up. I'm going to play a little snippet of his in just a second. But the president is, according to the members of Congress and most of them in the leadership, they believe that the president is going to try to distract Congress in this last year. He's going to distract Congress and the American people from what? From the failures of his administration. And, Andrea, I know you can list a bunch. You and I do every Wednesday as we do the show. You want to tell the folks when you do your show, by the way, before we get into the Paul Ryan a little clip?
Thanks, Elizabeth. Well, you know, I won't be doing a show tonight because we are here in Tallahassee, and we've got some things we're going to be doing later on this evening. Probably won't be doing a show tomorrow night either because we're going to be traveling back from Tallahassee. But Wednesday night, I'll be jumping on board. You can find me at blogtalkradio.com/ASK show. And I'll be looking forward to being back with my regular buds on at 9 o'clock on Wednesday evening. But, Elizabeth, we've got a lot to talk about here, and I tell you, there is just so much happening. I'm looking at the Drudge Report page right now, headlines, I mean, that are pertinent to what we're going to be discussing. I'm going to let you take it from there, and then we can jump into some of these headlines after you give your speech here about what's going on in Congress.
Okay, well, as I said, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on Congress. We're going to spend more on sort of the Franklin Graham tour and why we are here and maybe a little bit of presidential politics. But here's about 90 seconds of Speaker Ryan talking about what he's going to do.
It's no surprise that someone named Obama vetoed a bill repealing Obamacare. And we will hold a vote to override this veto, taking this process all the way to the end under the Constitution. But here's the thing. The idea that Obamacare is the law of the land for good is a myth. This law will collapse under its own weight, or it will be repealed. Because all those rules and procedures Senate Democrats have used to block us from doing this, that's all history. We have shown now that there is a clear path to repealing Obamacare without 60 votes in the Senate. So next year, if we're sending this bill to a Republican president, it will get signed into law. Obamacare will be gone. And then, for all the people who have seen their premiums go up, for people who have lost their plan or their doctor, for people who have to deal with all the mandates, the restrictions, and the red tape, we can replace this law with a truly patient-centered healthcare system. It's just a matter of time.
I wish that time were here, don't you, Andre? I wish it weren't
sure
10 months away.
But
the speaker is making the point, and he's going to play out the whole process all the way down to the veto override vote. But, of course, you know, the bill passed. 240 members of the House voted to pass the reconciliation bill. But Congress College listeners know that it takes 290 votes to override a presidential veto. So that's not likely. So he'll go through the exercise. This week is when he's going to tee it up, and then we'll see the failure of the House Republicans to override. No big surprise there. Andre, did you by chance listen to CNN's Jake Tapper this weekend on State of the Union? He had Ted Cruz on. Did you catch it?
No, I didn't. Elizabeth, tell us what he said.
Well, he was talking to Ted Cruz about, obviously, it's the Cruz. Trump seems to be back-to-back, or tete-a-tete, I'll say it that way. They seem to be the two that are going back and forth the most. He said on Jake Tapper's State of the Union that he was not going to round up the 11 million undocumented immigrants and send them home. I'm going to quote. He said, "I don't intend to send jackboots to knock on their doors. Every door in America, it's not how we enforce law for any crime." And, of course, this is in obviously polar opposite to Trump, who promised to deport all 11 million of them. I wonder how that's going to play, because they're splitting. Obviously, one is completely different than the other. It'll be interesting to see how that plays, especially coming up in the February primary coming up. What were you going to say?
Well, yeah, February caucus in Iowa. Well, I think, first of all, the use of jackbooted thugs is a bit extreme. I'm not sure that Trump himself has said he would use jackbooted thugs. And so, of course, it's more campaign rhetoric. I get what Ted Cruz is saying. He's not going to be pursuing with the same degree of vigor what Trump says he's going to do. However, I think that the populace out there, populace ACE and populists, ISPS, are going to see that that's not going to accrue to Cruz's popularity among the greater populace, okay? And I'm talking about the people who don't pay attention to politics, the people who aren't like you and I, who are really, really paying attention. It will appeal to those people what Cruz is saying. They understand what he's saying. He's going to do it constitutionally, lawfully, et cetera, implying that Trump isn't. So I'm basically, at first blush, that's my take on it.
Well, and it makes some sense. And as you said, the jackboot phrase, it's a little inflammatory. I'll just leave it at that. But, yeah, they seem to be the ones going head-to-head. But listen to this. In an AP poll, I found this just a few minutes ago, Trump obviously leads in New Hampshire for the Republican presidential primary. He's got 25%, up from 21%. But guess who number two is? It's John Kasich, the Republican, current Republican Ohio governor. And, you know, people are kind of like, really, John Kasich? Yeah, Andrea, he has been doing a phenomenal amount of ground game in Ohio, mm-hmm. in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly telling you how many town hall meetings he's been doing, et cetera, et cetera. You know what's – this is kind of interesting. They did this live interview. It was a telephone interview to get the poll results. They came from January 7th through January 10th, but unsolicited voter playback, and this is when the voters apparently in the poll or in the phone poll, they had an opportunity to say, do you want to add anything? And – this is what they said concerning Ted Cruz. Basically, they say that he has been hurt by learning that his place of birth is not the United States. So I assume they're calling people that are not, as you said, people that are on top of politics, like our listeners, like your listeners, and they're learning that Ted Cruz wasn't born in America, and that's giving him a little bit of heartburn. So maybe that's the reason Donald Trump keeps bringing it up. I don't know. It'll
be
interesting.
It certainly is distracting for the Cruz campaign. I would imagine that instead of putting his message out there and following their goals and objectives, this is waylaying them into having to defend and explain Ted Cruz's nativity, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the nature of the game. You know, I'm looking at the Drudge Report headlines right now, and they're saying that, the share of Democrats reaches record low. This is Gallup. And another Trump showing poll up in Iowa, commanding lead in New Hampshire. I mean, I guess it depends on what poll you're looking at. But the funniest part about this is he's now playing at his rallies the song Born in the USA.
I love it. The guy is a media mogul or a media master. Born in the USA. I love it. Only he, that's pretty clever. That's pretty clever. And, you know, if it does give some people heartburn, then maybe Ted Cruz does need to figure it out. Maybe have the challenge in court like it's been suggested.
Yeah.
Well, I want to remind the listeners that I have Andrea Shea King with me, my dear friend, the host of the Andrea Shea King Show, most days of the week, and I get to do the Wednesday show with her most Wednesdays. We're both here in Tallahassee, Florida, with friends, family. We are here to see Franklin Graham kick off his Decision America tour. He's going to go to all 50 states. He's going to appear at the state capitol of all 50 states, which, of course, is public area, so you can get a permit to do that. And he's going to encourage us, we presume, to vote, but more importantly, to vote biblically. And, you know, that brings us to, you know, Andrea, the two presidential candidates that seem to be vying for the evangelical vote are Ted Cruz and, of course, Marco Rubio. And it's kind of interesting how they're trying to get where they need to get with that. Marco Rubio recently got Rick Warren's vote, and he's of course the pastor of the Saddleback Church. I'm gonna play here for 1 minute. I don't know if the listeners heard it. I played it Friday. It just really struck me as pretty powerful, but more importantly, it struck me as a pretty bold move for Marco Rubio to do an ad that is all about his faith. I don't know if you heard it on the Friday show, Andrea, if you've heard it. It's only 30 seconds. I'm going to let the listeners listen to it again. This is Marco Rubio basically professing his faith and how important it is to him and how important it is to him on a daily basis. Here you go.
Our goal is eternity, the ability to live alongside our Creator for all time, to accept the free gift of salvation offered to us by Jesus Christ. The struggle on a daily basis as a Christian is to remind ourselves of this. The purpose of our life is to cooperate with God's plan. To those who much has been given, much is expected, and we will be asked to account for that. Were your treasures stored up on earth or in heaven? And to me, I try to allow that to influence me in everything that I do. I'm Marco Rubio, and I approve of this message.
Again, I'm proud of him just for doing an ad like that. That's a pretty bold ad for a politician to talk about his faith mm-hmm. in that way. I don't know. And we're here, like I said, in Tallahassee, getting ready to go to the Franklin Graham rally tomorrow. I just was pretty impressed with that. But again, going back to Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio trying to split the evangelical vote, that's going to be a little bit of a tight wire. You know, I think the Republican Party in general identifies themselves basically as social conservatives, but then you get into whether you're Jerry Falwell evangelical, whether you're Jimmy Swaggart or a Billy Graham evangelical. You know, it all matters right now, Andrea, but after the after a handful of these primaries, we're going to see all of the candidates, those that are left, those that haven't fallen by the wayside because of the loss in primaries, they're all going to sort of start drifting to the middle, which I sort of think that's where Trump has tried to stay for the most part. Movement will be pretty interesting in the next 60
yeah.
days. You've got February 1, the Iowa caucus, and then a week later you've got New Hampshire, and then March 1 is Super Tuesday, and then the musical chairs really start being moved around.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. You know, it's interesting too that right now the message from the candidates is designed to appeal to the Iowa voters who are traditionally conservative, Christian conservative, evangelical. And it makes one wonder how that message is going to change, if that message will even be dropped as the campaigns move further into the campaign season. I mean, with all of the concern right now about the Muslim immigration, the Muslim terrorism, radical extreme Islamism, et cetera, you wonder if the message of Christianity is going to resonate throughout the months ahead, or is it just specifically designed to appeal to and attract voters in Iowa?
Yeah, presumably they are there just for the Iowa voter, or that the message is stronger for the Iowa voters, and it gets less strong as they go to New Hampshire, and then it gets, of course, less strong mm-hmm. as it goes to Super Tuesday. But mm-hmm. nonetheless, it's strong right now. And you know what? It'd be interesting, Andrea. Maybe if we do the show, your show on Wednesday or later in the week, you can sort of do a comparison. Will it stay strong after Franklin Graham? Is mm-hmm. he going to be able to mm-hmm. direct a little bit of the rhetoric for the national political scene, certainly with the Republican Party, after tomorrow? I guess, you know, we'll hopefully be able to give the listeners maybe in the middle of the week or whatnot the flavor of the event. But that would be interesting to see if that actually affected the rhetoric a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, especially given the fact that Franklin Graham, the thrust of his message is to have people vote biblically. And, mm-hmm. I mean, we saw that when you and I were out on the campaign trail back in 2012. You know, there were folks out there with their placards and their bumper stickers and signs that said, vote biblically. And I wonder if that wasn't a precursor, a little peek into what we might see this campaign season. Maybe the time is now for that religious revival. And Franklin Graham going out and doing a nationwide tour with that message may very well resonate and who knows, maybe bring people into the fold, given the threats we are facing from those who are anti-Christian.
Exactly. And, you know, so let's think about it on the Republican side. Blatantly, openly, evangelical, strong Christian roots. You've got, of course, former pastor Mike Huckabee, not doing so great, but has been a leader in the Republican Party for many, many years. He's a candidate for president. Mm-hmm. You've got Senator Santorum, Rick Santorum, former senator from Pennsylvania, openly a Christian, a strong, strong Catholic. Then, you know, we just mm-hmm. talked about Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio. I mean, there are others. Rick Perry, who was in the race beforehand. He's big, big Christian. So, what? If nothing else, it's paving the way. It's making it easier for you to have a strong Christian faith, and man, that is phenomenally important in my mind.
Yeah, and I also think that not just anti, let's just say Muslim anti-Christianity amongst the Muslims, but also you have a clear delineation, too, with the candidates. For example, again, quoting from the Drudge Report right now, 53% of Democrats polled say that the candidate should stay in the race even if she is indicted.
Really?
You know,
that's amazing.
I mean, yes. Isn't that incredible? I mean, you talk about those who are rudderless, who don't have a rock upon which to stand, and the guideposts, the guidelines. I mean, who would ever want a candidate to stay in the race if they were indicted on crimes? 53% of the Democrats.
Wow.
I
now,
think that
you
draws
opened
a
it.
Real clear line.
It does. That's almost like a line of demarcation. And you mentioned at the top of the show the fact that the Democrats are losing ground, basically, in their numbers. You know, you and I have talked about it on your show, Andrea, and I know I've talked about it on my show, the fact that Michael Moore and I just all of a sudden drew the blank on the big Democrat PAC guy that spends an awful lot of money. He's spending $11 million to try to get millions of illegal immigrants registered to vote in the Democratic primaries for obvious reasons. Go ahead.
George Soros? You think it's
Soros? Yes, I am. Yes. George Soros is the one that piled all the money in. And, you know, he's bound to know what you just read. He's bound to have seen that in other polls and other demographics, and they've got to be sort of nail-biting. They've got to be a little panicky because if they don't have the numbers, they don't have the numbers. So, anyway, very, very interesting. Let me flip to one thing real fast before we go back to the Capitol and Tallahassee and why we are here. And this was something I thought was very interesting. Inbound states. Now, this is states where people are moving. Some of the inbound states are southern states. Some of the inbound states are the states that have right-to-work states. Let me read you some of the states where they are moving out in droves. And this is from moving van companies. This is not any kind of government demographics. This is moving vans companies. So you'd have to presume that they're pretty factual. They don't have a skin in the game other than the movers. The number one is New Jersey. They're leaving New Jersey in droves. Number two is New York. Number three, Illinois. Number four, Connecticut. And Governor Casey, hate to say this, your state is number five. And this is the five top states in which Americans are moving out of quickly. And, you know, they moved to Florida in phenomenal numbers. 800 new people move to Florida each day. And that sounds very impressive, like we should be busting at the seams, but of course a lot of Floridians pass away each day. So Florida has always been that state where people want to come. And you know, we're in the state capital. We're in Tallahassee. We're all the policymakers. They're going to be here tomorrow. They're going to be here for the opening of the state legislature, not to mention Franklin Graham being here. But you know what? Your policymakers, Congress College listeners know this, your policymakers, your governor, your state representatives, they serve you, and they can serve you by lowering the cost of living, removing regulations and all these other fees that they charge, streamlining bureaucracy. Those are the things, folks, that make states attractive. Those are the things that keep your state off of the top five states that want to places where people want to move out of, and put you on the top five of places where they want to move to.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Friendly, user-friendly government is also very important. And some of these state governments that have decided not to go transparent or have just made it difficult in just the simplest of things. That, you know, the frustration level, the American people's frustration level with their state government, if they have any connection with them, also can, I mean, I'm sure you've seen scenarios where people move whole businesses because of the frustration level.
Right. My concern about that, though, is that these people moving in from New Jersey, New York, the northeastern states, that they're bringing with them their liberal political attitudes and their liberal voting records, and they're turning what might have been red states originally to purple and eventually to blue.
That is my biggest concern about that.
And that's an obvious concern. And you know what? Something like what Franklin Graham is going to do tomorrow, who knows? Maybe he will touch those blue staters if they're here, and he'll hear the message. You know what? Speaking of the message, let me play his. This is a little more than a minute. This is his appeal for his Decision America tour. Let me, here you go here.
Okay.
Hello, this is Franklin Graham. You know, our country is in great trouble, and I believe we are at a crossroads. And to be honest with you, I don't see any political hope or political answers. The Democrats aren't going to turn this thing around. Our Republicans aren't going to turn around. And the Tea Party, they're not going to do it. The only hope for this country, I believe, is an almighty God and his son, Jesus Christ. And so in 2016, I'm launching a tour called the Decision America Tour. And I'm going to go to every state. We're going to hold prayer rallies to preach and proclaim the gospel. And what we're going to do is challenge the church to take a stand and for Christians to vote for candidates, men and women who will stand for biblical values. You see, I believe that we can mobilize the church not only to get up and vote, but for Christians to run for political office at the local level, the state level, the federal level. And if we can raise up an army of men and women who are willing to get into the political field and to hold to biblical values and live a life that exemplifies those values, that's what's important. This is the Decision America Tour, and you can go to decisionamericatour.com to get more information. But be a part of it. Stand up. We need your voice.
I know. A radio show up here in the Panhandle, Lou Vickery, Lou in the Morning. And he's famous for saying this. I'm going to cannibalize his statement a little bit. Inaction is a decision. He says it a little different than that. But if we decide not to do anything, that's a decision. We're making a decision not to do anything. So Decision America, part of what I'm taking from Franklin Graham and his Decision America tour, and maybe the reason he named it, is let's make a decision to do something in 2016. Let's make a decision to support Christian candidates or candidates that we believe can help us puzzle out of this mess. But, and again, inaction is a decision. So let's not do inaction. Let's vote. Let's get out there. Let's exercise our rights. So I'm looking forward to it. We were able to drive by the Capitol and sort of see where all of it was going to happen tomorrow. We did our little recon mission. So we are ready. Andrea, you know what I'd like to end with? Our friend and your friend, Lloyd Marcus's We Are Americans. It's a song that we love. He wrote it. He performed it in so many of the rally stops that we took with the Tea Party and with the Conservative Campaign Committee. I'm going to leave everybody with Lloyd Marcus's We Are Americans. Andrea, thank you for joining me. This has been a kick, and if anybody is near Tallahassee, head over to the Capitol tomorrow. It starts at noon. In the meantime, have a blessed week, and Andrea, thank you. We will talk to everybody later.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Elizabeth.
Good people, blessed by God. A unique experiment which has survived against all odds. With courage and compassion and a yearning to be free, grateful Americans, you and me, stay strong Americans in your quest to restore liberty. It's up to you and me
to bring us back where we should be. To the words of our Father, penned in truth and dignity, faithful Americans, that's you. The things